I was slinging coffee for more money than I was getting paid to care for people in the healthcare industry. So that was the moment where I realized, okay, I need to try something else.
Hey Paige, welcome to Money Bites.
Hi Minky, thanks for having me.
Super excited to have you here. Would love to start off with, could you give a one-line summary of yourself career-wise and one-line surprise that people don't know about you?
Okay. Well, firstly, my name is Paige. I guess my one line for my career, I'm a very ambitious and excitable person. I currently work in tech. So I work on the product side. It's kind of right in between product and client facing. So I'm just super excited to be where I'm at right now, career wise. And as far as something that might be a surprise, when, this is a little bit random, but when I was little, I was obsessed with Irish Celtic music. So that's my little fun fact. And it's so beautiful. And it just makes me feel so at peace. So I don't think a lot of people know about Gaelic or Celtic music, but it's very relaxing if you ever want to chill out.
Did you listen, perform? Or
no. So it's so funny. We were in Walmart with my mom when I was like maybe 8 years old. And I'm not sure if you remember, but there used to be these like things that you can press on and it would play a little snippet of music for you and kind of demo the CD. And so I was clicking on a bunch of those buttons and it started playing some Celtic music and I forced my mom to buy me the CD and I listened to it like every day when I was a kid. It was just,
oh my goodness. You kind of dated yourself and I love that we're contemporaries.
Oh man, I know. I was like, I don't know if anyone's going to remember this, but I do.
But so too, funny. Celtic music. Wow. That's awesome. Super. Yeah, awesome.
I know. We got to put it on the map.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Can we start off with that, Ashley, as our first topic, Walmart CDs, memories and childhood.
Oh my gosh.
What was your first memory of money?
Money memory. Oh man. If we're going to be really transparent and really honest, I think my first memory of money was like the idea that it's very scarce. So I come from a background of like a single mom with three kids, and I was the youngest of the three kids. So I feel like I became money conscious at a very young age, just because we struggled a bit in that area. Never went without, and I'm completely blessed. But I think my first memory with money was just this idea that we don't have a lot of it. So no, you can't buy all these things. And so that's why it was such a big, like, memorable moment when she just bought me that CD when I asked her for it, because, you know, those things didn't happen all the time.
Do you remember what that scarcity felt like?
I think my mom did a really great job at never allowing us to feel like we were completely without. But I do remember vividly feeling like I can't ask for too much, especially knowing that I have an older brother and older sister, you know, who also need things. My being the youngest, I was just made very aware of the idea that she has three kids to take care of, not just you. So I didn't feel like completely bombarded with the overwhelming feeling of scarcity, but I was just very aware of it at a young age.
I have to say that's quite precocious in a sense that when you think of the stereotypical youngest child, sort of spoiled kid.
Not me. No, I think I was maybe spoiled in a different way. I was like the good kid. I had the good grades and my older siblings were the wild children. And so I think I like to think I'm my mom's favorite, but definitely not spoiled monetarily.
Do you think that has impacted your relationship to money as an adult?
Yeah. I mean, I think as you grow up and you start to realize, you start to become more aware of your relationship with money. And I think it's funny that we're talking about kind of career growth and progression and things like that, because when I was younger, I never had that mindset of, you know, going for more. You know, I think we were brought up in a very humble mentality, which is great, to just be grateful for what you have. And just that the idea that riches come from so much more than money, and like wealth goes so much farther beyond just the monetary aspect of life. But yeah, I think as I grew older, I started to realize that that could be detrimental, you know, when it comes to your growth and progression, and, you know, that there's not this idea of money being a priority. It doesn't have to be a selfish thing. So I think it did impact my my idea of career progression and ambition up until a certain point. And then I started to kind of just view things in a different way that allowed me to really expand my opportunities going forward.
That's really powerful in a sense that your mental shift from money equaling greed to money equaling empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
Love to double click into that. So you started your career not in tech, but from the health sector. Can you share a bit about what that experience like and where was that moment when it clicked for you that like, I should be asking for more, I should potentially be looking at other industries, etc.?
Yeah. So I think maybe backtracking just a little bit, like the pivoting into tech didn't come until a little bit later, which I'm happy to chat about. But I think the moment where I realized that I needed to shoot for more and like shoot for higher was I was in college and my healthcare background originated from the idea that I was going to go to physical therapy school. So my undergrad degree is in physical therapy and therapeutic exercise. So that was the trajectory I was headed on. But I realized after working in the industry for a few years that it wasn't a fit for me personally. Like I enjoyed it and I loved it and I loved my patients, but it wasn't something that I can see myself doing forever. That was one thing. And then the second thing was, this is maybe a little bit vulnerable, but I was making more money working at Starbucks than I was working in physical therapy.
Oof.
So that was a kind of a wake up call because I had two jobs and I was going to school at the time. So I was doing a lot and I just realized that my grad degree was going to cost so much more to go into a job that very likely wasn't going to pay me what I desired in the future. And currently I was slinging coffee for more money than I was getting paid to care for people in the healthcare industry. So that was the moment where I realized, okay, I need to try something else. Also the idea that I had, you know, asked for a raise and I'd asked for, you know, I tried to put myself out there professionally within that job and it just, you know, things weren't aligned to give me that opportunity. So I decided to stop waiting and just my next job was also in healthcare, but it paid substantially more than my previous one. So that was where I got my first kind of taste of, hey, I can afford things now, you know, like, hey, I can go out to eat or, you know, do things that, you know, I had to do very sparingly before. So that was kind of the catalyst to this idea of just shooting for the stars.
You mentioned some key points, one, grad school. So I'm all for folks, you know, going into studies and areas where they're passionate about and want to learn more about. But just with where the state of at least the US student loan situation is in right now, I do think it makes sense for you to be a bit more critical about what is the ROI of your education.
Yeah.
So I love that you did that and chase your dreams, but don't put your future finances at a hostage for it.
Within reason, I realized that my grad degree would cost more than the annual salary of the job. Mm. And that was what just didn't really make sense to me. You know, no matter how much you love it, and I still do very much enjoy physical therapy and therapeutic exercise, and I help all my friends that have aches and pains, but you know, it just didn't make sense for me personally. So I think, yeah, that's a great point. The ROI you have to be very conscious of.
Awesome. And then second, wanted to clarify, so were you doing the same type of job, but you got a raise when you changed clinics, or did you move into a different role?
It was a slightly different role, still within my skill set. So I had all the skills to do the next job. So it was a bit of an upward trajectory there, but still very much, you know, within my comfort zone in healthcare. So I became, instead of like an aide position or just a front desk person, I became like the surgical coordinator for one of the top Beverly Hills orthopedic surgeons in the country. So that was a step up. And again, it did pay quite a bit more than what I was making at the previous job, but it was still also very similar. And then my next job, well, we can talk about that, but that was the pivot into tech job after this current one.
How did you get out of the mindset of, for a lack of a better word, complacency? For a lack of a better word, being kind of grateful, but also being okay with just what you have, into actually going for more?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it was a slower process for me in the beginning. And then once I made that one change, it was a little bit more of a quicker, you know, mindset shift. And even to this day, I think I'm still very much, I feel very confident in the idea that I can be super grateful and ambitious and at the same time. I feel like I've always been a grateful person. And like you said, that can very easily blur the line with complacency. So I think it was just that one realization of I'm making more money slinging coffee than doing this in my career. And if I make one move and I can make that big of a, you know, for me at the time, that was a big jump in, you know, pay, that the sky's the limit. And I think I started to take myself seriously as a professional in the sense that, like, if I'm advocating for myself and I don't have someone else in my corner, that's okay. I just need to continue to do what's best for myself, you know? And again, not to say that you're not grateful for your employers and you're not, you know, grateful for the opportunity, but, you know, if that's no longer suiting you and it's no longer aligned with your ambition or your goals or, you know, whatever you need in that point in your life, you can move on. And I think maybe my not so much complacency, it was probably a little bit of complacency, but also like this idea of loyalty to my previous employers that once I think I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here, but once I did move from that job that was not really paying me great, I realized that it was just a job, you know, and they didn't care about me anymore. You know, like I didn't care about them anymore. You just kind of move on. And so I think that like if I removed loyalty from the table, it allowed me to just, you know, look out for myself.
I think that's so poignant, especially in this current environment, because I've heard from so many women who especially take on this de facto motherly role at teams where they feel they're letting their teammates down by putting themselves, their interests first. And that can lead to them overstaying sort of at a certain company for a while. And this massive at-scale layoff in the tech sector, I think, has been a real wake-up call for a lot of folks who realize at the end of the day, you got to look out for yourself. You got to be your own best safety net.
Yeah. Absolutely. When I was going through an interview process a little while ago, someone was saying something along the lines of like, you have to have the mindset that it's a business contract between you and your employer. Like it's not a personal thing. And they will very quickly, if it suits the needs of the business, remove your position. And you need to have that same mentality as well, that it's a contract and you guys both don't owe each other anything, but you're going to serve each other as long as it's right for both parties, you know? So just having that, taking the emotion, I think, like you said, as women, we have this idea that we need to take care of everything. And I think it goes obviously beyond the workplace and into a variety of societal factors that make women feel like we need to keep the boat afloat and, you know, make sure everybody else is taken care of before ourselves. But yeah, I think that also helped me to see like, this is a business transaction and I'm allowed to see it as that as well.
Love it. Where did you take that concept further and go from that second position to your foray into tech?
Yeah. So for that one, I think the position that I was in that, you know, gave me that little wake up call to move forward, the job was fine and it was good, but it no longer was something that I felt like I was necessarily, not that you have to be praised all the time, but I think I was being a little bit overworked and I was doing kind of a job of a few different people, which is a very common thing nowadays where, you know, especially even with layoffs, with a variety of different things, sometimes you have to do the work of like two or three people. And without the adequate support, I just felt like it wasn't sustainable. It wasn't a sustainable job for myself. So I had been just looking for other opportunities and, you know, this job came along that was a really like a godsend for me. And it was right during the pandemic too. So this was another big factor that, you know, obviously working in healthcare, you're working with a million different people and face to face. And so it was right in like the height of the pandemic. And so I tried to ask my boss at the time if I could work from home, at least hybrid, just, you know, to reduce my exposure. And it wasn't an option. So I started looking for remote jobs. And of course, a lot of tech jobs are remote. So I found one that was almost perfectly aligned with my past skill set and now would allow me to have enter into the world of tech. And so it was for a Swedish healthcare, you know, physical therapy company, which was my degree. So I had,
full,
you know,
circle. Really,
yeah, it came full circle. So I was able to, you know, transfer my skills from physical therapy to, and then, you know, into the tech world. And that just kind of launched me to where I'm at now. And I did get laid off from that job too. So I got my first experience with the wonderful tech layoffs.
Oof. What came after that?
After the layoffs, I think the same thing. I guess now that I'm speaking about this out loud, I can really see like my progress from, you know, no ambition, loyalty, complacency to I'm always going to do what's best for me because everybody else is doing what's best for them. And that's great. So during that time of that, I was at that last job, I had also been trying to, you know, promote my career and, you know, move forward. And, you know, I'm also like the type of person that likes to have their hands on a lot of things. I like to be stimulated at work. I like to do, you know, help people with things and work on different projects. And so I was doing that for a while and things were just really slow. And so I knew that the company wasn't doing great just because of like the lack of work. So in the back of my mind, I had this feeling, although it was not talked about and, you know, there were no layoffs yet, I had a feeling that my job wasn't going to last much longer. And so I had started to look around and apply for other jobs and see if there was other opportunities for me. And so I was, you know, applying and not really hearing back. And then I got the news one day, just opened up my laptop, saw an email and a meeting with the HR and my manager on my calendar, you know how that goes. And I got the word and then, but luckily, thankfully, they gave us a small severance package. So I got, you know, I got that, which was helpful for a month. But then one of the jobs that I had applied for called me back. And so everything worked out completely. And that's where I'm at now. And so it almost like just the timing of everything, I look back and I'm like, wow, this is incredible how everything worked out. Like I was out of job for a little bit, but I made it through. And, you know, thankfully I had severance and, you know, was able to pay some bills in the meantime. And now I'm at a job that I just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy. You know, it's not just a job and it's something that I can see myself doing for quite a while. And plus they have like a really amazing culture of, you know, career growth and just everything you can ask for in an employer. So that's great.
Love it. One of the things that I'm hearing and I'm very inspired by is you didn't just move roles or you didn't just move companies. You've moved industries.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love the fact that through each of those jumps, you were really honing in on what makes you more interested, what keeps you, feeds your curiosity and your passion, etc. And we talked a bit about this in our pre-call, but how do you think you listen to that passion and courage to pivot? Because it's not native to a lot of people.
That's a great question. And I think, I don't know how to explain this, but to say that I guess I can consider myself like a realistic optimist. So I do value reason and I have my feet firmly planted on the ground, but I also know that the sky really can be the limit, you know, like you are the one that holds your boundaries in front of you. You're the one that puts the cap on whatever it is that you're trying to do. And so I feel like for a lot of people, all they need, and I'm speaking from personal experience, is just that one experience of upward mobility, like just one experience with something that can prove to you that you can do it. Like I heard another quote, I'm full of quotes. I heard another quote the other day that was saying like, confidence doesn't just come naturally to most people. Confidence is from proving yourself right. And so what you have to do is you have to do something and prove to yourself that you can do it. And then once you do it, it's kind of like an exponential thing where you just realize, okay, I can do this. And, you know, and I'm at the point in my life right now where, you know, sure, I don't have it all figured out and I'm not a millionaire, which I don't really aspire to be, but I'm helping my friends like to realize that the cap that they have and the ceiling that's over their head, like that's their ceiling and they can raise it. They can bust through it. They can do whatever they want at any point. So I think it was just that, like just get one little taste of it and then you can see you can do it again and again and again.
Out of curiosity, if sky is the limit, why wouldn't you want to aspire to be a millionaire?
Why not be a millionaire? That's a great question.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I will be one day. Who knows?
I'm twisting arms here.
I mean, you'll be the first person to know when I become a millionaire. If we're being honest, like money is not like $100,000 isn't what it was 20 years ago. You know what I mean? So that may seem like so much money, but it's really not, you know? So I mean, a millionaire is not a billionaire. So I'm more like I have my short-term goals in front of me. And I think that once I hit those, like I will eventually probably want to get there and, you know, obviously within reason, and it's just not my short-term goal right now, but eventually in the perfect world, you know, sure. That would be amazing.
I'd love to work with you through Winnie so that it becomes a realistic world rather than a perfect world for you.
Let's do it. Let's make it happen. Be my coach. I'm down.
Do you think through all of the, you know, reaching for the sky steps that you've taken, your relationship with money has also changed?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think I'm still on the journey of like figuring out what works best. But even in our last, you know, chat that our pre-call, you know, I was being a little vulnerable with my finances and, you know, where I'm at so far, it's definitely changed in the sense that I don't feel like it's scarce anymore. Like I don't feel like I have to hoard, but there's also a balance with that because I'm also not frivolous at all. Like most of my friends would be like, come on, you can buy this. And I'm like, shh, you know, like no, like I have other goals, you know, I think that's what it is. Like I've reallocated my priorities when it comes to money. So I don't necessarily want to spend money on, you know, things that other people are spending it on. I'd rather save it and, you know, put it in a HYSA or, you know, spend it on an experience that I'll remember forever. You know, like I save all my money so I can travel. Those are my short-term little, you know, the things that give me joy. Yeah. I would say that I definitely don't feel like it's scarce anymore. I don't feel like I'm, you know, lacking anything, but I wouldn't say that I'm frivolous either.
Love it. I love a healthy balance. And do you think in that balance, the long-term goals are also starting to formalize and build your foundation?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I'm still learning as I go with a little bit of vulnerability that I shared too. Like my mom's a single mom, like she didn't know anything about finances, still doesn't, you know, so all of the things that I'm learning today are things that I'm having to discover for myself. Even my siblings don't necessarily have the best money mindsets. And my sister's doing amazing for herself. She has her own business and stuff, but she's not the most financially savvy. So I'm even trying to teach her something, even though she makes so much more money than I do. But yeah, I would say I'm still just on the journey to learn more and, you know, make my future is always like this looming thing, you know, I'm never not thinking about my long-term goals. So I'm at the point where I need to just continue to put, you know, small steps into action and then I'll get there.
Love it. Love it. I love the fact that the youngest child is leading the path.
Like, please listen.
I also love the fact that you're not just thinking about it. You're taking action towards building that foundation. And I love how you're also putting that ferocious experimentation that you've done with your career now to your money journey. It sounds very exciting.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely not opposed to things. It takes a little, I'm very risk averse. So I'm trying to like just venture out a little bit more because, you know, no risk, no reward. So I'm definitely getting there.
Principle number one of personal finance. Awesome. Thank you so much, Paige. This was fantastic.
Thank you. No, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to chat with you again.
Awesome. Thank you.